So we were discussing, they were saying that someone had seen that they're not in control of their body and mind, right? Oh, and I apologize for being late, okay? It's a very bad habit. It's very disrespectful, and I'm sorry for that. We have some emergencies today in Spain and the Congo. Okay. So we were discussing whether someone had gotten rid of their karma yet, and somebody said no, and we said why not? The karma that would throw them into another life, another suffering life. And then somebody said they still have that karma, and we said why? And they said because they still have the craving, which literally is a it's called craving, sepa, in Tibetan, but it means a kind of misunderstanding. So just be aware that that word craving doesn't mean craving here. It means a kind of the misunderstanding. So they still have a misunderstanding which does what to the karma, the projecting karma? It triggers it or it arms it, you see? Say sundepa.
Sundepa.
Sun means to fix, like sojong, to repair your vows. So su, and then dep means to do that. Dep is a universal verbalizer. Okay, like ER in English, or IZER. Okay? So sundepa. So they don't have that karma anymore because they don't have the kind of misunderstanding that would trigger the karma or set the karma off, you see? So the idea is that you have billions of karmas in your mind stream, and you will die with billions of karmas in your mind stream. And also there's this nasty thing that if you die hungry, that out of all the karmas in your mind stream, that kind of suffering at the end of your life as you die tends to sundepa a karma to be a hungry ghost or something like that. So it's not fair. Karma's not fair. You can have thousands of karmas of teaching people in the Hamptons or old book Jimba courses, but then if you just die hungry, all your whole life's work is thwarted because you can't remove those karmas. The question is, can you stop them from being activated? So we're discussing the kind of desire or the kind of misunderstanding that can activate a karma. And if you don't have that desire, you just as well don't have the karma. Okay? And that's also the fourth chapter of the Yoga Sutra discusses that. Karma Shukla Krishnam Yoginas Trivida Mitrasham. So we've been in that. And then in our position was that it's not enough to realize you're not in control of your body and mind as you die. Because even that level of understanding is not enough to stop the level of misunderstanding that triggers your karma. So then they asked us, well, what kind of misunderstanding do you have to stop at your death to stop triggering your karma? And we said, it's not enough to know that you're not in control. You have to understand why you're not in control, right? Which means what? You have to understand that everything that's happening to you is coming from what you did to others in the past. That's all. And that nothing happens for any other reason, like that. If you go that second step, to understand why you don't control your body and mind, then if you can hold that in your mind as you die, you're okay. Got it? Okay. So then the question came up, how could you practice in your life, during your lifetime, the correct process, the correct line of thought that could kick in as your head goes through the windshield, Like, wouldn't you have to practice a bit? Because death is very, very frightening, Go to a skyscraper in New York. This is a good exercise. We used to do it. Put your toes over the edge. Have somebody hold your shoulders and go like this, And then you're like, ah! And then that state of mind, if in that state of mind you can remember how to think of things, then you can die, you see? Then the karma won't be triggered, you see? But that's almost impossible. So he's saying, what should we do to practice? And he said, well, developing the right antidote to that kind of misunderstanding is all about what? In Tibetan. I'll give you a clue. Yeah, korsum. Say korsum. So korsum of torwa. Say torwa. Yeah. You have to understand the three elements in an act of feeling. I feel, they make me feel good. They make me feel bad, right? You have to understand how the person who just walked into your life isn't happening by accident. And you have to understand how you showed up at the right moment, you know? It's uncanny how karma puts you into direct encounters with the person you least like, you know? Like out of hundreds of people, you know, like, You you go to the beach or something, you're like, what? Anyway, so who put them there? Who put you there? And then what? Yeah, and who created the interaction? You see, I mean, who created what's going to happen between you, you know? So those are the three elements in an act of feeling. You can practice disabling the trigger by examining how you feel during the day. Because sorwa is, it never, what do you call it? Unpausable. Feelings never stop your whole life. Your whole life you are having feeling. The heap of feeling is occurring every moment of your life. Either good, bad, or neutral. So you don't notice the neutral one so much. But if you can attach to the act of feeling an understanding of what the hell's going on, then because you're feeling all day, maybe you have a chance as your head goes through the windshield. Got it? Like, it's a nice, it's a smart thing to connect your emptiness understanding to, how you feel, right? So that's where we are. He said if you get good, if you feel good, you get the craving or the misunderstanding where you don't want to lose something. And then if you feel bad, you get the craving or misunderstanding where you don't want to lose, sorry. Or you want to lose something. And then a lot of people have misunderstood over the centuries. Many, many people, many generations of Buddhists in many different countries have said, therefore I should not feel. I should try not to be happy. When I eat a chocolate chip cookie, I should pretend I'm not happy. And, you know, if someone slugs me in the face, I should just smile. You know? And see if they want to, you know, be around them more. You know what I mean? Like that. They misunderstood. I should be some kind of vegetable. The guy in Kung Fu, what was his name? David Carradine. Like, he was like that, you know? Somebody slug him, he's like, you know? Somebody say something nice, he's like, you know? And, you know, and that's been fed to us, you know? We think that. We start to believe that, you know? So he's going to clear it up a little bit. Whenever they get a bad feeling, they'll get a craving that they want to be separated from it, which is not a bad thing. Here comes a very interesting thing for people interested in pramana, the study of pramana. This is one of the big debates in the study of pramana. Okay, let's go. One. Oh. We just made a statement, so am I going up or down? Yeah, I'm going up because I said something. People want to get away from what they don't like. People want to keep having what they do like. And then the guy said, no, they don't. And I say, yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. And we do it in English on the first syllable. In Tibetan, you do it on the last syllable. Okay? One, two, three. Da ta de tar ke we tung ken tsang shing gyal ken dang tel we shi. You have to go up to the last paragraph to find out how you're going to phrase it. Because the mission statement, the lady in the Congo today, she wrote me, she said, I like your mission statement on the website, Diamond Mountain website. What does it say? It says something. I don't know what it says, but it's something like all the conditions to get you enlightened. You know, that's our mission, is to give people the conditions to get them enlightened. Here's the word. What is it? Say Tunken. Tunken. So tune means to be in harmony, to be in cooperation, to support something, to promote something. Ken means a cause or a factor, but here you can just take a cause. They did so because all the factors that would promote these cravings, I guess, are tsang. Yeah, tsang means complete. Okay, are complete. So we covered, if you're going to hypertext, it would be the all and the complete. Okay? Saying gyalken. Gyalken. Gyalken means things that would work against the arisal of something. Okay? Like, you know gyalwa. Okay? And none of the... and are complete in them. And they are free. And they are without any of the factors that would prevent them. This is classical event theory in the Sautrantika. Like, you haven't studied that yet. Like, if we do more, if you want to have a 30-year course in Pramana after 3-year retreat, this is what we'll cover, okay? And it would be something like, there's a debate about cause, about event, it's event theory, right? So, and the classical example is, if you have a grain of corn, and you dig a hole at the proper depth, and you place the corn in there, and you cover it in the right season with the proper soil, and you water it correctly, and there's proper sunlight, and there's no wet, you know, then will the thing grow? Well, yeah, they say not necessarily. Okay, the debate goes like that. They say not necessarily. And they say, well, why not? And they say, because a gyalken could show up in the form of a big black crow, you know, who digs down, takes out the seed, and flies away with it, you know. So when you debate event theory, you have to say, all the tunkens are present, but, and none of the gyalkens is present. No crows. Okay? We got dirt, we got water, we got sunlight, we got seed, we got proper season. And no crows. Can any force in the universe prevent the growth of the corn seed? All the tunkens are there, and none of the gyalkens are there. Okay? It must grow. Yeah. So that's just interesting to think about. That has a lot of implications for your Dharma practice. You know? Like, if you plant certain seeds and you avoid other kinds of conditions, then you must see emptiness directly. You don't have a choice. Nothing can stop you. You're Mindokpa, right? You're unstoppable, right? So that's a... But we're not studying that. Okay. Da pa ni le sowe gen ki se pa te sowa te da la yang ye je sun be ye. We just have to go back and pick up the noun, right? I mean the pronoun. It is an... They are, and they are too, because the same work says, what's the same work? We hope it's the Bodhicaryavatara. Yeah. What do we call it? Craving? Craving comes... The first part's okay, right? He's saying, what's the tunken for the arisal of the trigger as you die? What's the tunken? The habit of misperceiving your feelings your whole life. The habit of misperceiving the three elements your whole life. My whole life, I didn't question who put me there, who put them there, and who made the stuff between us. My whole life I thought it was their fault, right? So therefore I triggered my karma at death. At death, I couldn't stop my karma, okay? But then he says, and feeling is had with those too. What's he mean? Yeah, meaning, like we'd have to check a commentary, but Gyaltsebje's commentary, but it probably, then you spin another wheel of life. Okay? So say, Dumba Tsorwa, Gyepa Sepa. Even in the wheel of life, right? Number seven, link seven is feeling. Link eight is the craving, right? But you go through the links like this, right? Like a clock, clockwise. So, but if you trigger a feeling, it's obvious you'll trigger a craving. Then you'll trigger Gupa Lemba Chupa Sipa, two kinds of arming the karma. And then you'll get a Kewa at number 11, rebirth. And then Gashi, aging and death, with number 12, right? But what takes you back to 7? 7 causes 8. Yeah, but in a way, what if you didn't have 8? What would happen to 7? Who said, oh? Yeah. If you didn't have 8 o'clock, what would happen to 7 o'clock on the next day? No 7 o'clock. Got it? So, yeah, the tunken for craving is the feeling. But the tunken for the feeling is the craving. Got it? It's a cycle. It's a samsara. Say samsara. Okay? Got it? That's the meaning of the word samsara. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you. That'll save time later. If you see stuff like that, let me know. We have come to a very major thing. Like, I think you can say that after like 2 years, we have reached something. Ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Rang lu la den da wei den zi feng ci ye de sor wei kor su den me du mun sum du tok pa la. Okay. What do we got? Rang Lu. Okay. Say Shen Luk. Gakpa. Rang Luk. Shakpa. Tsepa. Owa. 3 steps of every monastic text, right? What's the first one mean? Shen Luk. Gakpa. Refuting the other guy's position. We present it and we refute it. The cool thing about this, what's a fancy word for educational? Pedagogical system. Eliana. Eliana. Now, it is cool. It's a cool thing about the monastic system. First, the other guy comes up and makes a proposal. And we get to hear clearly what he believes. And then we refute it step by step, statement by statement, we refute it, right? Then we get Rang Luk Shakpa. Much later. Much later. We get all the subtle wrong ideas that you yourself are going to have about a subject before you hear the right idea. Got it? It's a very beautiful system. You hear all the subtle wrong ideas first. And then only then can we give you the right idea. All Western textbooks are... No, they're just Rang Luk Shakpa. They're just telling you what to think. You know? They just state... here's how algebra goes, you know, and they just tell you what they don't say these are the wrong ideas about algebra that people used to think. You know, Newton before we understood chaos theory, you know, and like that, you know. This is a different system. It's a beautiful, he gets to come first and criticize us. And we stop those criticisms. Then we present our own system, which is all a Western textbook does. But then the coolest thing is what? He gets to come back and attack us again. You know, he gets to come back on step three. Sopapoa means he gets to come back and say, okay, you criticized me for that, and then you gave me your system. But you know, your own system has all these faults in it. You know, and that's so cool. That last part especially, you know, we get to hear the other guy defend himself. And then he's always wrong. Okay, as for our own system, we say that there is, in fact, a way that a person can eliminate Den Dawei Den Zen. What does it mean? Yeah, I like to call it, I like to give it a noun, like a tendency or a habit, you know, can eliminate just such a tendency to hold things as being real. Okay? What such a tendency? Which, he didn't say, I'm going to, our Ranglu, our own system, will now present how you stop seeing things as real. He said, Den Dawa. Just such a, or that kind of. What's he talking about? What kind of Denzin were we just talking about? The one that triggers your karma. That's interesting for us. You know, tell me how to stop seeing things as real. That's one thing. But tell me how to stop it in the moment, the crucial moment of my life. I could go shooting off to Vajragiri's heaven instead of to another buoy. You know, or worse, you know, like, give me, you know what I mean? No, like, that's a, tell me how, you know, tell me how I get rid of, because really all he did so far was to describe how you get in trouble. When he talked about the three elements, the korsum, he was just describing how bad things happen. He didn't give us the information we need to stop the trigger. Here comes it, here it comes. Den Dawe Denzin, say Den Dawe.
Den Dawe.
Denzin.
Denzin.
That kind of Denzin. That kind of grasping to reality. You know, got it? That's the one we're interested in. Why are we interested in that? Because if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have karma. If you didn't have karma, you'd be an arhat. If you could you get to be an arhat and not have a certain kind of perception? That's how we got here. Got it? Okay? You gotta remember why we're here. Okay, as for our own system, we said it is effective. And that's because you can eliminate it on a munsumdu, direct perception, that none of the three elements in an act of feeling is real. Okay? All right? That's our position. Come to realize, and it's not just some academic thing, you know? We have challenges all day. Unpleasant things happen to us all day. All day where you get out of bed because you want something. There's depressed people who never get out of bed. I know a very wealthy person who has bouts of depression. She doesn't get out of bed. She has a bad depression day, she doesn't get out of bed. Why? She doesn't want anything. She has no hope for anything in the day. The reason you and me swing the leg off the bed, even if it's 2 p.m. 2 days after, it's okay, is because you're hoping for something. You want something. You want something. You think something will happen today, you know? Like maybe they'll have a good dessert at the class or something. You know, and okay. And then you have to struggle to see how the thing you want and me wanting it and the wanting itself is all a projection of how I treated people in the past. That's all. That's all. Okay? Let's go. Are we telling up or down? Up. Why? Who said that? That's not it. Because we're in the wrong loop. If you're in the wrong loop, I mean, you're going to be going up most of the time, right? Hopefully. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. 나타 내게 들려 간세 서포감에 칭 서로왕 여파 마임파 대세 내각 니통내 세파치칠 독민결 셰승베이 So heavy prenasal on the last two words. Mingyur, right? Open vowel before a prenasal. Say Mingyur. If you're from East Tibet and you're like a Kagyu from Kham, Mingyur. Mingyur. You gotta do it. Mingyur. Okay. Then you'll talk right. All right. Here we go. I'm not dissing the Kagyus, but just the Khamas. Okay. And you can too. Because in what's the word what's ge mean? Language. Deke means the same sort of thought is expressed in the following words. Okay? And you can too because this idea is also expressed in the words which are probably from the same text, right? Okay. Okay, that's all. It's worth checking someday on your own if he's covered the three elements of an active feeling in those lines. And he has, but it's a little subtle. Okay? Yeah, we have a Kartik even in a long loop. He gets to do a little super poem ahead of time. I don't know why. Okay. I guess we're just being nice. Okay. But let me explain something first. When you see emptiness directly, do you permanently remove any mental afflictions? What? How many? How many? It's three. Some texts say two, but it's really three. What? Sorry? I forget those other texts. But, I mean the big ones. Intellectual. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, you don't doubt the path anymore. You don't believe in weird kinds of morality where you would stab yourself or sit in the middle of four fires and burn yourself. But the big one that we're talking about here is what Mercedes Last said, is that you no longer intellectually believe that what you're seeing is real in the way you used to think. You know? But as she said, just after the direct perception of emptiness, you come back to seeing things that way. You still see things that way. That's called, so that's a distinction between, say, Kundak and Henge. Kundak, Henge. Kundak means as a result of a process of intellectual processing. Okay? Kundak means that. Vikalpa in Sanskrit. You know, this is intellectual. You know, someone asks you, is what you're seeing real? Is everything in your life so far real? And before seeing emptiness directly, you'd say, of course, it is, you know. Then you see emptiness directly, and you see that you have not had a correct perception in your life for a second. No perception in your entire life. You know, 64 per finger snap if you want to, you know. 64 divided, you know, multiplied times that, multiplied times 60, multiplied times 60, multiplied times 24, multiplied times 365, multiplied by a number of times years you've been alive. I don't know, a billion perceptions or something. Not one was correct. as wrong as slamming the brakes on because you thought it was two cute little bunnies crossing the road and it was just two leaves blowing across the road. As wrong as that. We saw two cute, really, really cute little bunnies on the way here. They were playing in the road. But if it had just been two leaves and the wind was just blowing them and you slammed on the brakes and the person next to you banged their head on the windshield or something, and then you saw it was two leaves, you'd feel foolish, right? Just that foolish, we have been every single perception in our life. Just that foolish. Okay? Just that crazy. Just that wrong. And then all our reactions wrong. You know? All the brake slamming. You know? All the blaming other people for the water on the bathroom floor. You know? Have been just as wrong. You know? Blaming other people for our problems. Constantly. So anyway, an Arya has this they come out of the direct perception of emptiness. They have this last fleeting thought, God, that's the first correct thing I ever saw in my life. And then boom, they're back to seeing things wrong again. And they can't help it. Okay? That's called Lenge. Say Lenge. So Lenge is inborn or innate tendency to see things as wrong, the wrong way. And they come back to that. But if you ask them, on a good day, not when they just had a fight with somebody. You know, do you still believe what you're acting? Your behavior seems to indicate that you still think things are real in the way before you saw emptiness. And you say, yeah, I know that. I just can't control myself. Yeah, and they say, well, do you understand that what you're seeing is wrong? I mean, in a good day, on a good moment, just after, you know, some good chocolate chip cookies or something. Do you understand that you were seeing things wrong for, you know, 28 years or something? Then you saw them correctly for 20 minutes, and now ever since then you've been seeing them wrong again. And they say, yeah, I understand that. So that means they don't have kunta. Okay? They don't have the intellectual belief that what they see is real. They know that. On a good moment they remember. Okay, whether they act on it is another question. Because they didn't remove the other 83,997 mental afflictions that they have. Okay? But Lenge, did they get rid of? If you ask them, did you get rid of your innate tendency to see things as real? They could honestly say, no, because I'm seeing that right now. Okay? Anytime I'm out of the direct perception of emptiness, I go back to seeing things that way. And in fact, to become an arhat is to stop that. Got it? Okay. Sort of. Okay. got away with that. Someone comes and says, the meaning of all these lines of scripture is to say something about the state of wisdom where without relying on an understanding that things have no nature of their own, realize that people are devoid, are devoid of any self-standing. I split the sentence, right? Because it's already hard enough, okay? And that's a translator's trick that you have to learn, right? You just break it out into pieces. Because you can't just go on for a whole paragraph in English. It gets confusing, okay? Say again? Yeah, good, okay. The meaning is all this to say something about the state of wisdom where without relying on understanding, on the people around. Mm. this wisdom allows you to eliminate within yourself the intellectual forms of mental friction. We could say learned forms. But not those which are innate from birth, let's say. Question being, if you come to see that you don't have, you know, something bad happens in your life, you know, maybe a relationship breaks up or something. So does it help to understand that we're not in current control of what's happening to us? Yeah, it's comforting. To some extent, it's comforting, right? For a while, right? It prevents you from murdering the other party for a while, you know? I mean, it keeps you, like, out of trouble for a while. Look, don't feel so bad. This stuff happens. And people, you just can't control the things that happen. They just happen. No, you go to somebody, a marriage counselor, and you'll say, I have this problem, and they'll say, look, things happen and they're out of our control, so just chill. Chill for a while. What else are you going to do? You know? You think if you shoot them, they're going to love you? You know? Let it go. You know, let it go. There's nothing you can do. You know? That's just life. Things happen, you know? And then, so for a while, reshik, right? For a while, your mind is, okay, I can't do anything about it. It means I can't do anything about it, right? You just chill for a while. And what we said to the guy was, oh, by the way, yeah, and he was saying, if you could learn to chill that way at your death, then you would not trigger your karma. And we said, it's not enough to chill at your death that way. It's not enough. It won't stop the karmas from being triggered, right? So then, what did we say to him? Look, that chill thing works for the time being. Yeah, the gross forms of your anger and your being upset, the gross forms will be removed. Reshik, for a while. Two problems there. For a while, and only the obvious forms of your anger at the other person will be stopped for a while. Okay? But what's the implication? Yeah. They'll come back. And the underlying bitterness is still there, and you know that. In a situation like that, yeah, okay, I can control myself in public especially. But the underlying bitterness is still there. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it goes, right? Because it's not an antidote. It's not a complete antidote for that mental affliction, for those bad feelings, for the hurt and the pain and the anger. It's not enough. It won't stop them. It will suppress them. Then he comes and gives another proposal. He's giving another proposal. He says, I understand what you said about the thing about for a while and the obvious forms. But how about if we divided it into, like learned forms of behavior or intellectual forms of misunderstanding, and then the ones you carry with you into this life, which are much harder to remove, right? What if we made the division like that? Like, understanding that you're not in control is enough to stop your intellectual struggling with the situation. You know? It's enough to stop that kind of anger that you're aware of in this life. But it's not enough to stop the tendency for anger that you carry with you as birth, as you're born. He tries to make a different division, right? Especially with misunderstanding. Like the Arya, the new Arya, the baby Arya, he doesn't believe that what he sees is real anymore. But he still sees it that way. Got it? He still has the inborn problem. He doesn't have the intellectual problem. Got it? So he's trying to make this kind of distinction here. Oh, if you understand you're not in control, intellectually, you'll be okay, even though you'll still have a habit of doing something wrong from your past life. Got it? Okay? Let's just do this part. One, two, three. Be careful with the jeb. Now listen, listen, okay? Say chepa. Chepa. Now say njepa. Little N before the J. Njepa. Njepa. So chepa means to do, and it's the most common verb in most languages, right? Next to is. Okay? But when you put a pineso in front of it and you change it into njepa, what does it mean? To make, to divide something. Okay? Jepa. Like, go jepa, go means door. What do you think go jepa means? Open the door. Okay? Divide the door. You see? They say go jepa, go jeda, go jeda, open the door for me. And, okay? It doesn't mean make a door. That's go jepa. Got it? Say go jepa, go jepa. The first one was open the door, go jepa. And the second one is go J, without the pineso. So pinesos are important. They're not just some kind of goofing around. And if you don't know them, then you will sound like a German talking about inexpensive and a certain kind of car. Cheap and a cheap. No, because they don't have a J. You see, there's a distinction. In different languages have different problems that way. You know? Car, pen, cup. You know, what country do I come from? Okay. No, because they don't have an aspirated equivalent normally. They don't say pen or car. They say pen or car. Okay? All right. And we can't, and we sound the same to a Tibetan. You know? We sound like, what are you trying to tell me? You want me to make a door or open the door? Just tell me what you want. I'll do it. You know? Either way, I'll do it, but just say it right. You know? And you're like, and if you don't know about prenasals, you can't. Okay. But making this kind of distinction too is something mistaken. Kepa usually means, it can mean feature, it can mean especially, and in odd cases it can mean distinction, to make a distinction, kepa, to divide a distinction, okay? Because the fact is that this kind of realization allows one to eliminate where it happened. Eliminate reishik, yeah, for the time being, of both. The innate form of the idea where one holds the person to be both self-standing and substantial. I'm going to do this for clarity, right? And two, the manifest forms of both, and to eliminate seeds for, and it is the name of one to eliminate the seeds for both, let's just say, both forms equally. I'd have to put this here, I think. Let's put it this way. You came into this life with a certain degree of belief in control, right? You were born with a certain degree of belief in control, that you had some control over what was going on, right? You came into life with that. Small children cry. They want something, they can't get it, they cry. They reach for something, and they fail and they cry. So they in reaching, you know they have some belief in control, right? They believe that they can control the event that's happening around them. And they cry as a sign of what? It's a realization of the lack of control, really. If you give them 50 or so years to think it out, maybe just reaching for mom is not enough to get mom, you know? Something else has to happen. So that beginning as a child, you come into this life with some degree of belief in control. And then over the course of your life, that belief should naturally wane. Who said wane? That's nice. What's the Hebrew? That belief hopefully should wane. You should get less upset as years go by about fuck-ups in your life. There should be some kind of realization after 30, 40, 50 years that you really don't have the control you thought you had, right? So we can divide the idea that you have control into like the kind of ideas of control that you came into this life with, and then you know some unfortunate new ideas of control that you picked up in this life. The first are called innate. The second are called learned, right? Learned kinds of behavior. Like you know, oftentimes your friends, the people you hang out with, influence you negatively. And you begin to have more problems about control than you had when you came into this life. You learn new wrong ideas about control, right? Those are called kuntak. And then the other are called henge, right? So, you know, hopefully you come in with a bunch of henges and you reduce them. And you don't hang out with people who are foolish and pick up more kuntak ones. Right? Like that. So he's trying to say that if you can come to an understanding that you don't have control, could we say that that will allow you to stop learning new misunderstandings about having control, but it doesn't affect the ones you came into your life with? Do you think he's correct? I'll say it again. He's saying as your life goes by, and you learn that you don't have control, you'll be able to lessen your new ideas that you have control. But that in itself won't affect the ones you came into this life with. Do you think it's correct? I'll say it one more time. Someone demonstrates to you, what do you call it? Irrefutably, you know, your last boyfriend or something demonstrates to you irrefutably that you're not in control. You can't control events. You know, you didn't want them to do it, they did it, and they did it. And you told them, and they did it anyway. And it's out of your control. It's obviously out of your control. So you go to a Buddhist class, and Rob's teaching the crane thing. And he says, look, you know, it's like this guy up in the glass box who controls this big crane that's making a building, right? And we always assume that we're like the guy in the glass box controlling the crane. But what if nobody's controlling the crane? No? What if the crane just does what it wants to do? And what if you don't have control over what's happening in your body? So you come home from that class, and you say, he's right, you know? I don't have control. You know, I saw that with my last boyfriend. It's true, I don't have control. He was right. Rob was right. You came into life with certain ideas of control. You learned new ideas of control in your life. Then you went to Rob's class. Which one will it affect?
The learned one.
Yeah. Shenlu, the other guy, is saying it will only affect the ones you learned newly in this life. And it won't affect the ones you came into this life with. What do you think? Both. Who said both? Yeah, when in our translation, when it says equally and equally, what happened to the second equally? Oh, right, equally. Yeah. Yeah, that's our ranglu. What Rosa said is our ranglu. That's our system. If a boyfriend really smashes you and a big breakup, you know? And then you're like, this, now I'm convinced I don't have control, right? It should affect the ideas you came into the life with and the ideas that you picked up in this life equally, more or less. The first kind will be harder to get rid of, but for a few hours after his class, Reshik, the manifest forms, Mundgirwah, of your belief that you have control are, they're stopped, right? Got it? Then we say, so he says, he's still trying to defend his idea. If you can see you don't have control, it's enough to stop your mental affliction. Okay? And if you wanted to make a distinction, Mr. Rongluk, about it's affecting some, and what is the distinction we made? What did we say about the power of seeing you're not in control and not going further? Just going home and saying, look, people do it, right? So I went to the marriage counselor. He said, just chill. What can you do? What can you do? If you call them, they'll get mad. If you don't call them, they'll leave you. What can you do? Just chill. You know? So he's saying, he said, that's enough to stop your mental afflictions forever. Reach nirvana. We said it's not enough. But how did we qualify it? We made a distinction. We kepan jepa. What kepan jepa? We said, for a while, and the manifest forms, it will eliminate. But not the seed. Equally. Okay? Now he's coming back and saying, I want to make a different distinction. You know? You can affect the wrong ideas you picked up in this life, but you can't affect the wrong ideas that you carried from your last life. We say, come on. I mean, it will affect your ideas about having control. Whether they come from your last life or whether you learn them in this life, it'll affect them, right? Equally, to understand that you're not in control. And it will equally not affect what? Yeah, the seeds of either one, okay? The deeper forms, it won't affect them. Got it? Okay? Our distinction still holds. Forget your new little distinction. Got it? If you have a good idea in this life about not having control, it'll help you for a while with the manifest forms. Whether those are ideas that you came into this life with, or whether they are new ideas that you picked up in this life. And just thinking to chill because you can't control stuff is not going to stop the seeds for your mental afflictions. You'll still have the bitterness, you know. You can get over you can not blow up at them in a crowd, at a party. You can not go over and slap them, you know? Yeah, you can control yourself, but in your heart, right, you're like, you know, like this, you know? You can't stop the seed, right? But what would the Rangluk say? If you wanted to stop the seed, if you wanted to be able to sit in a party with them and not get angry, what? Huh? See that the breakup, the bitterness, comes from you. They didn't do anything. They're an instrument of your own deeds. They are the stick, right? They're not the other guy. The other guy is you, right? They're just the instrument of your own karma coming back to you, you know? They're just the expression of the karma. They didn't make the karma. You made the karma. Got it? You created them. So what are you going to do? Get mad at them? You know? You're going to go, if somebody hits you with a baseball bat, then what should you do? Take that bat, kick it, hit it, smash it, you know? Give me that bat. You're going to hit me? No, I just want to get the bat. You know? And you're like kicking it and stabbing it and hitting it, you know? And then the guy with the bat, he's like, what are you doing, you know? And he's like, I'm getting back at the bat, you know? And you're like, you mean you're not going to hit me? And he's like, no, you didn't do anything. It was just the bat, right? It's the bat that hit me. It's not you. Right? It's crazy, but we do it all day. We do it all day. Anytime you have a feeling, you're doing it. He's not saying you just do it when you're upset at your old partner. He's saying you do it every single moment of your life. The tiny preferences of your life are expressions of our ignorance. It's a little too hot in here. I wish you'd turn down the volume. You know, my butt hurts a little bit. You know, no, these are all equally ignorant deeds and equally ignorant karma. You know, you're blaming the floor. You're blaming whoever at Diamond Mountain didn't get the right carpet, or who left the door open, or you're blaming the guy who does the mic, or you're blaming Geshe Michael. And there's only one person to blame. You're beating up bats all day. You know, so am I. It's really stupid. Okay. I feel good after this class for like half an hour. Okay. So you must not be talking about the... Okay. Anyway. No, it would be nice, right? I don't think it works. I understand what you're saying. Oh, equally not enough, right. Yeah, you're right. Okay. It's not easy to say it properly in any case, right? I'm going to see. We can do snacks, if anyone's got snacks, okay? Who was number 15? Schlepper. No? Are we, no? Jiggy? Where's Jiggy? No? Rain check? We'll rain check it. Okay. Okay. All right. This is really important. This was, I think, the toughest question in my Geshe debate. And some big shot Geshe who was the abbot of the nunnery in Dharamsala, and I don't know his name, but he came down for the debate from Dharamsala. And he asked me this question, and he said, do you have to understand first that your parts are not Michael, or do you have to understand first that Michael is not Michael? You know, the person or the parts, right? Pumbo, the skandhas. Do you have to understand that your body and mind have no nature, to understand that Darcy has no nature? How does it go, you know, when you see emptiness, or when you want to see emptiness? Should you be working on understanding that your ear has no nature of being an ear? Or should you just go straight to Julie and work on Julie, right? So what's he just saying here? So here's a scriptural reference, you know. What's he saying? Yeah, work on, when you're trying to grasp it, work on the parts first. Okay? Like, what would be a part to start with? Yeah, that's what he's saying. What are the five heaps? Your body, your physical body. And in some schools, you expand that to the world around you. Very beautiful. The forms, your feelings, your tendency to distinguish between people. This is good, this is bad, this is wrong, this is right, this is, I like this person, I don't like this person, right? Number four, all the other stuff about you. And number five, your raw awareness, the fact that you're aware. You know, I hate the word consciousness because it doesn't really, do you have a consciousness? Yeah, where is it? I don't know. You know, but are you a blob of clay, or are you perceiving anything right now? Are you, did Muhammad Ali just knock you out, or are you conscious right now? And get used to thinking of the last heap that way. I'm goddamn, I'm conscious, you know? I can see this guy, I can feel something, I can hear things, you know? I'm not dead in a box somewhere. Okay, got it? Thank you. Got it? So he says, if you want to understand yourself, then understand first your parts. And why not start with feeling? Which we said last week, I think. Pumbo namlai tsoa dang. Dushe loshi pumbo shak. First chapter of the Abhidharma says the reason they put those two heaps separately, when there's really 52 mental functions, why take out two of them and make them Pumbo Lokshi Shak? Why make them separate? Yeah, because they're the cause of all tension, fighting, and the cause of samsara, right? Koi Gyurchir and Gyurchir. Okay. Yeah. So we can say that if one is good, you're right. not be able. Good. That was rather important. Okay. Okay, read. 1, 2, 3. Dema todna kazaki dharme zopar to mi nipa dang. And if you're not, and if you don't realize that, then you won't be able to realize fully the fact that I'm going to try an experimental translation. Let's see how it goes. Okay? Play with it. Play with it. He switched from Rangshin Mepa to Dog Mepa. He switched from Rangshin Mepa to Dog Mepa. I'll give you an example of Rangshin Mepa. Is a fire hot? What's the definition of fire? Sasha Sepa's Metini, right? Sasha Sepa Metini Maimbata. So it's not the definition of fire?
No. Oh boy.
This is, you're going to have to take your laptop on the big ground now. Uh-oh. Anyway, it is, you can say, you're right, though. You can say that. You can say that. Meiteni. Okay. So is a fire hot? Yeah. No, that's the definition of a fire. I mean, that is the defining quality of a fire. That's the nature of a fire, to be hot. Right? So can we say that fire has a nature? It's hot, right? But he said fire doesn't have a nature. We just said that. Rangluk said that. These things have no nature of their own. Okay. You guys are getting good. Okay. This place is going to be no fun in a while. What's that mean for the rest of you? Yeah, of its own. No nature of its own. You have to say of its own. Does it have a nature? Yes, it's hot. Where did the nature come from? Coming from me. You know, I hurt somebody with that kind of pain. Therefore, fire has the power to hurt me. If I had never hurt anyone and I stuck my hand in a fire, what would happen? Nothing would happen. Okay? Like that. Or it would feel good. Right? So does fire have a nature?
Yeah.
Does fire have a nature of its own?
No.
Is a fire fire?
Sure.
If a fire is not hot, is it fire? We've established that a fire is not hot. We said fire has no nature.
No. That's
Chi-Chir. Does fire have any nature of its own?
No.
So it's not hot?
Chi-Chir.
Okay, so it's not hot from its own side. So fire's not fire. So it's true that fire could not be fire.
Chi-Chir.
If it were cold.
Then it wouldn't be fire.
It wouldn't be fire. So we draw a distinction, get the distinction between Rangshin Me and Dak Me. Got it? Rangshin Me, say Rangshin Me, and Dak Me. Rangshin means a nature of its own, a quality of its own. Does fire have a quality of its own? That's tricky. I don't know. Suppose you say it doesn't have a nature of its own. Well, then is a fire fire? You have to say no. From that point of view, you have to say no. If you understand that fire doesn't have a nature of its own, would that lead you to understand that a fire is not a fire? Necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. Got it? You could go from one to the other. Is fire hot on its own? Is a fire fire on its own? That's all. So one would lead to the other. Got it? Got it? If you understand about yourself that you don't have a nature of being happy from your own side, could that lead you to understand that you don't have a nature of being yourself from your own side? Which means you could be made of light. Got it? Fire. Yeah. Got it? Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's a beautiful... Let's see where he goes. You're right. You're absolutely right. I was hoping someone would mention that. You're absolutely right. Did anybody say directly in here? He just said realize. He didn't say directly. Okay? That may be a clue. That may be a way to work that out. Let's see where he goes. But it's what Bert brought up is a big, big, big question, you know. In the end, when you come out of seeing emptiness directly for the first time, it'll hit you. When I become a Buddha, they won't call me Michael. You know, it's something about me that hits you first, okay? So that's what he's saying. The first emptiness you perceive directly is the emptiness of Michael or Mercedes or Darcy or whatever. Got it? What Bert said is true. But to reach that point, you better work on your feelings first. Got it? Indirectly. Okay. Because you got to start somewhere, right? And your last breakup is not a bad place. Because that's your heaviest mental afflictions right now, usually. Yeah? Okay. Pumbo denzin chigi dangzin yina. Let's do it. 1, 2, 3. Pumbo denzin chiki dangzin yinna hansaki denzin dangzin yingwa. Got it? He's making that same step from denzin to dangzin. Okay? Say denzin, dangzin. Holding it to be real, and then holding it to be itself. If you can stop holding it as being real, you can move on to seeing that it's not itself. Okay? And there's this, what he's bringing up is that classical division into, say, chöki dagme, kansaki dagme, chöki dagme, kansaki dagme. Like if you were at the Geshe Thupten Rinchen classes, it's in your brain cells, right? The fact that your parts are not your parts. The fact that your feelings are not your feelings, right? And then the fact that you are not yourself. Got it? So when they speak of the emptiness of things as opposed to the emptiness of people, they're talking about not just things in general, they're talking about the parts of people. The parts of people, right? So do we divide emptiness into two kinds? Yes. What are they? The emptiness of stuff, chi, things, and the emptiness of people, kansa, right? But in that context, meaning chi dang kansa ki den dang zin ni su ye wei. Ni sei ni su ye wei. You always introduce it that way in the debate. I'm not talking about dharmas, chi, things. I'm talking about things in the context of the emptiness of people and things. In that context, is things, things? Just things. No, it's the parts of the person. Got it? Got it? So two kinds of emptiness, what? Emptiness of the person and the emptiness of their parts. which one do you have to see first while you're studying emptiness? Start with your feelings, because they're so out front. They're so up front. Start with your feelings. He didn't say start with your discrimination, start with your jealousy. Well, but he's saying start with your feelings, because that's so much, that's where your suffering is right now. You know, that's where your real pain is. Start with something that's intimately, there's nothing more intimate than your feelings, right? And then you can work up to understanding that Geshe Michael is not Geshe Michael. Okay? And then that'll trigger the direct perception of the emptiness of Geshe Michael first. Yeah. So it's kind of like that. This is beautiful, okay? And if that is the tendency to see yourself as the self, then until such time as you can stop this tendency, you will never be able to stop your desire and other mental afflictions. That's really the crux of his whole argument for the whole last, like, 30 pages or something, okay? He's saying, until you see that Geshe Michael is not Geshe Michael, you'll never be able to stop being jealous. Never. And it's not enough to understand you're not in control. You can understand that Geshe Michael's not in control, and then 10 minutes later you'll get jealous again. Okay. But if you could ever understand that Geshe Michael is not Geshe Michael, you could stop your jealousy forever. Got it? That's why we're having this class, and that's why Diamond Mountain exists. That's why we're all here, right? You want to stop your jealousy and your other... You want to stop suffering, right? Mental suffering is much worse than the physical. To have a mental affliction is the most unpleasant thing in the world, and that's why we're here. And he's telling us, right here, in this sentence, right? Of all the stuff we've heard at Diamond Mountain, in this sentence he's saying, until the day you see Geshe Michael is not Geshe Michael, you will suffer. You'll still have those jealousy and other mental affliction. No hope unless you can see that Geshe Michael is not Geshe Michael. That's the wrong look. That's the guts of the wrong look of this whole book. You know? That's pretty powerful, right? I think we started a bit there. Yeah? That's a good place. In the text, right? And then we'll start a debate. So I was thinking that the lemons. Let's do this side this time, okay? So Giku is, Renee is the Giku. You know the Giku's job? You guys get these two rows facing each other, like in 2 minutes, and you have to kick them if they don't move and stuff like that, like fast. And then the lemons are going to be at the end. And me and Venerable Chuki is going to make lemonade.
Somebody else needs to run the camera.
That camera. Don't put the camera on us. There's another camera for us.
Nervous?
Awesome. This is not on a...
First, we have to pay our respects to this sort of hopelessly incompetent challengers here. Jimba Shedder, Jimba Shedder, the perfection of wisdom. Well, let's say Shedder of Jimba Jimba Shedder. The perfection of wisdom is the perfection of giving, I guess.
Chichir.
Oh, you say it's not? Shedder of Jimba, Mayimba Ta. Mayimba Ta. Yeah. So I guess wisdom is not the... I guess the perfection of wisdom is not the perfection of giving. Duh. So I guess the perception of... direct perception of emptiness is not wisdom.
Chichir.
Oh. Going down, check it. Dongyi Tofa Shira Yimbata. So I guess the direct perception of emptiness is a kind of wisdom.
Kind of wisdom.
Duh. Okay. Sadambo La Shira Paroto Chimbata. So I guess it's at the first bodhisattva level that you perfect in its fullest form the perfection of wisdom.
Talk on Drew.
Chichir.
Dongni Topa Sherab Ki Paro to Chimba Yimbe Shir. Because seeing emptiness directly is the perfection of wisdom. Good. He said it doesn't necessarily follow. So just to check on that, can you state in English the reverse? Kaba lo. Give us the kaba that you don't agree to.
Oh,
just
so
because blah blah just, blah doesn't just, mean blah blah blah.
Right. Just because the direct perception of emptiness is a kind of wisdom doesn't mean
it's the perfection of wisdom.
Is the perfection of wisdom.
Doesn't mean that the
thing that is perfected at the first bodhisattva level is the perfection of wisdom.
Good. Say it again, louder.
just because the direct perception of emptiness is the perfection of wisdom doesn't mean that the thing that is perfected at the first bodhisattva level is
the perfection of wisdom.
The perfection of wisdom.
Good. So, Uma Chidun La Toni Topa Tupa La Mayimbata. So, I guess in the Uma Chidun, the monastic textbook we're studying on emptiness, on the middle way right now, must only present the direct perception of emptiness in the sixth chapter and in connection with the sixth bodhisattva level.
Chichir.
Because there'd be no reason for an authoritative monastic textbook to launch into a long discussion on the direct perception of emptiness in a chapter devoted to the perfection of giving.
Chichir.
Because there's no connection between the first bodhisattva level and this big discussion about the direct perception of emptiness. That comes in the sixth chapter.
Peanut Keller says, Takman Drupa.
Takman Drupa.
Dawa Yuba. Dawa Yuba.
Ha.
So So there must be some reason why the book in the last 20 pages has been talking about perceptions and emptiness when it has nothing to do with the first bodhisattva level. It's not the subject. So there is a reason why the book would bring up the direct perception of emptiness in the chapter devoted to the first bodhisattva level.
Good.
Shut.
Because you can't have the perfection of wisdom without seeing emptiness directly.
Good. So, because you can't have the perfection of giving in its full form without seeing emptiness directly, right? Then that's why the book brought up the direct perception of emptiness in the last 20 pages or so. He's been talking for the last 20 pages or so about how the perfection of giving is connected to the perfection of wisdom.
No. Teacher.
Tony Dalba. Teacher. Why the hell, in the last 20 pages, have we been talking about this direct perception of emptiness? Is there anything to do with the perfection of giving? Anything to do with the first bodhisattva level? We'll give you a clue.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So it's because we're trying to draw the distinction between we're trying to prove why a bodhisattva on the first bodhisattva level outshines a listener or a self-made Buddha arhat.
So just do it in English. You do it in English. Just you're rechecking.
Okay.
Are you telling me
that the whole reason that we talked about the direct perception of emptiness in the last 20 pages is just because we are trying to see how a bodhisattva of the first level outshines lower arhats?
Just because?
Well, mostly because.
Mainly because.
Mainly.
Duh. Okay. Did you get that? Why are we talking about... why you have to see emptiness to get rid of... Why are we talking about why you have to see emptiness directly to get rid of your mental afflictions? In a chapter that's not talking about that.
Because we're trying to show that the distinction between bodhisattvas on the first level and self-made Buddha and listener arhats is not what they saw.
Yeah. Got it? Okay. For over 4 years, we have been on the first line of this book. And all that line says was that a person who just reached the first bodhisattva level, what? Sokinumba?
Outshines
everybody else, even
arhats. Of the listener.
Okay? Like, if you reach the first bodhisattva level, you are already superior to a person who has reached nirvana and gotten rid of all their mental afflictions forever. What was the metaphors used in the text?
Oh, the king's child.
Yeah. The king, the child of the king, from the first hour of his birth, Silky Numba outshines who?
All the ministers.
All the secretary of state, like that. In a kingdom, you know, if, what's his name, Obama had a new child, then that child would have seniority over Mrs. Clinton within the first minute of his or her birth. Got it? Just by virtue of being who they are. In the same way...
Bodhisattvas outshine arhats in the first moment. Lower arhats in the first moment of their birth.
Yeah, and the implication is, look, how long did it take Hillary Clinton to get there? Like, she worked so hard, she campaigned so hard, she went through all these things, you know? And then she got to be Secretary of State, right? Like, she worked many, many years to get there. And then Obama has a new kid, and then in 5 minutes, they're already there. Meaning what?
That the...
Someone reaches...
The bodhisattva...
First bodhisattva level?
Already.
Within 2 minutes, they are superior to these guys who worked their whole lives to get rid of their mental afflictions. For thousands of lifetimes, billions of lifetimes. They already outshine them, okay? And we say...
Dongni Dokpen, Silky Nimbe Chip. The way that a first level bodhisattva outshines these lower arhats is that you go.
Is the
person direct? Yeah, is that
they saw emptiness
directly. That's a new one. So why does a person? So if the question comes up, the book says they outshine you. Lord Buddha said they outshine you. And we have a theory. Chuki and I have a theory. It's because the bodhisattva has seen the emptiness directly, and the lower arhat have not. Tony Tope, Silky Nimbe. Tony Tope, Choki Nimbe. Because the direct perception of emptiness is like the coolest thing that could ever happen to you. And they have Sadambo Wei. Tony Tope, Chir. And what gets you on the first bodhisattva level is you perceive emptiness, do you? Where's that? So you don't need to see emptiness directly
to reach the first bodhisattva level. Chi-chir. So you do have to see emptiness directly to reach the first bodhisattva level.
Good.
So that's what makes you special.
Chi-chir.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes you special doesn't mean that you reach
the first bodhisattva.
The first bodhisattva level.
Yeah. So we're not talking about why people at the first bodhisattva level are special.
Teacher.
So we are talking about why people at the first bodhisattva level are special. And it's not having bodhicitta that makes them special, because you can get that before the first bodhisattva level.
Yeah,
definitely.
Therefore,
it's got to be the direct perception of emptiness that makes you special when you reach the first bodhisattva level.
But lower arhats have already seen emptiness directly.
Haven't lower arhats already seen selflessness directly?
Oh my God.
The plot.
She's living at the big gun.
Now let's go back to that. By the way, that's a good one. And then she'd have to ask you, what school are you in? Because the question of schools. You're now, she's Prasangika and you're Svatantrika. And never the two shall meet. Okay.
So it's not true that what makes you special at the first bodhisattva level is seeing emptiness directly.
So are there other people who haven't reached the first bodhisattva level
who have seen emptiness directly?
Shout. Arhats on the listener and self-made Buddha tracks, for example.
So, if you're an arhat on a lower track, you must have seen emptiness
directly.
Teacher. Why?
Because otherwise you couldn't have eliminated your mental afflictions.
Oh. Got it? What did he say? Otherwise you could not have eliminated your mental afflictions and become an arhat. That's why we're talking about this now. Got it? We're not in the chapter on wisdom. We didn't get to it yet. We did not get to Chandrakirti's discussion of emptiness yet. We're just talking about why somebody outshines another person. Right? Got it? We're not even to the main subject yet. All this stuff has just been for them, right? Are you telling me that to get rid of your mental afflictions, you have to see emptiness directly? That's the wrong look of this whole book so far, right?
Sure. Why?
Sure. Why? Prove it. Prove it in any way you want. Because we just had like 50 different ways to do it.
The sutra on the 10 levels says that the way in which bodhisattvas outshine arhats is not that bodhisattvas have seen emptiness directly and lower arhats have not, but rather a different thing.
That's a Kepama joke. That wasn't
question.
The question.
Implying that... what was your quotation?
We asked you a question. We said, look, do you have to see emptiness directly to get rid of your mental afflictions?
Yes.
Yeah. You said, right. Just give me any proof you want for that.
Because as long as you keep holding to a self-existent me, you're going to make mistakes and have mental afflictions. Trigger a
as long as you see things as things.
So as long as you hold to me, you will have mental afflictions.
Self-existent. Self-existent me.
Self-existent me.
Yeah.
So Lord Buddha, when he popped out of his mother's womb, did not take steps in the four directions and say, Ngani Jigdandina Chok Yin, I am supreme in this world.
He did.
He did.
Did he or didn't he?
He did.
Okay. So,
Lord Buddha must have mental afflictions.
Cheer.
I think beings without lives don't have a
Lord Buddha. Because Lord Buddha said, I am supreme in this world.
Kappa Majun.
So Lord Buddha doesn't hold himself as himself.
Do it.
So Lord Buddha holds himself as somebody else.
Cheer.
So Lord Buddha holds himself as neither himself nor someone else. Oh,
that's not how he sees himself. He sees himself as himself, just not self-existently himself.
So what is it to hold yourself self-existently as yourself, which is different from holding yourself as yourself? By the way, the defenders can help each other, and they can confer, and that's allowed. We can make fun of them while they do so, like, you know, they can't make up their mind or something, but you have the right to confer and to agree on your answer.
So what's the difference between the one and the other?
Oh, he sees himself as himself, but he's not seeing himself as himself. He's seeing himself as himself for a reason.
Right. Yeah. He didn't say that.
He sees himself as himself for a reason. There's a. He doesn't see himself as himself independently. He sees himself as himself
dependent
because of his because he's projecting himself as himself.
Could you run that by us again? What's the difference between Lord Buddha seeing himself as Lord Buddha and Lord Buddha seeing himself as a, what you call a self-existing Lord Buddha?
He knows where it comes from and that not everyone sees it that way.
Okay.
So
if you know where you come from, you don't see yourself as a self-existent self.
Teacher.
Wait, you can't say teacher to that because that's what you just said.
We agree with what we meant.
Save those arguments for your partner. We would like a rather more clarification than that on what it means to see yourself in a wrong way. You know, how would Ted see Ted in a wrong way that might lead to Ted having a mental fiction?
If I see
because I know I came from my mommy and I still have mental fiction.
If I see myself as coming from something other than my own past actions, then I'm seeing myself in a wrong way.
So you don't have to see emptiness to see yourself in the right way.
Cheer.
Because you only have to see dependent origination to see yourself in the right way.
Because you only have to see that Ted is a projection of Ted to see Ted in the right way.
For the time being.
Regime. Well, good. Let's get it.
For the time being.
So just to see that you're not in control would be enough to stop your mental affliction forever. Regime, Miss Regime. If you were in the monastery, if you were a monk, she'd be called Reshikma for the rest of her life. I'm not telling you my two secret names. Okay. Because Reshik, it will remove your mental fiction. For the time being. If Ted understanding that Ted is a projection, meaning Ted understanding Ted's dependent origination, is enough to stop Ted's mental afflictions forever. Sorry. Reshik. For a while, and that stops them forever, then Ted understanding that Ted's not in control, which is also only for a while, should be enough to stop his mental affliction forever.
No.
That's what the scripture says. That's what we've been debating about.
Didn't say that.
What?
The scripture was complaining about the understanding that you're not in control being not enough. It only worked for a while.
Yeah.
So we're saying that's the same problem with seeing that Ted's dependent origination, because it only works for a while. You have to go further and see
emptiness.
Emptiness directly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Korwa lata maybe. That leads right into our last question. There is no end. You say.
There is no end to the cycle of suffering.
There is no end to the cycle of suffering. For all living beings.
For all living beings.
Chichir.
Ta-yala-ta. So there is an end to the cycle of suffering for all living beings.
Duh.
Why the hell?
Because wisdom stands on two legs and ignorance stands on one.
Look at that. In Tibetan. Nyenpo.
Nimbo.
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 Dobden.
Dobden.
Yebeche.
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 Maybe next time we'll get some better opponents. Okay. Okay. Nimbo, you ready? Okay, thanks. They tell you in the monastery, when I first went to the debate class, I came back to my teacher, I told Geshe Lothar, I said, I didn't understand a single word, not one word, you know? And he said, keep going. And I went, year after year, I went. And then one day, it was just like, oh, wow, I just understood everything they said, you know? So I think it's happening. You're reaching this, what do you call it? You're reaching this critical mass. You are, a lot of people here, you're all getting close to some critical mass where you're really understanding not just, both the language, but you get the ideas now. So I think it's really cool. The next term is going to be something very beautiful, I think. Because you're at some kind of critical mass now. And I didn't really expect it so soon. So it's kind of beautiful. So, lekso. What are you saying? Sadhu, right? Okay, cool. Let's go.